Welcome to the Pioneers in Pixels audio podcast, hosted by Sanjay K. Katarpal, CEO of Marketing Markers, a digital marketing agency. Here we have discussions with some of the leading attorneys. Disclaimer: the podcast is for educational purposes. Please reach out to attorneys for legal advice.
Hey, good morning, everyone. This is Sanjay Katarpal. I'm the marketing guy and owner of digital marketing company by Marketing Markers. Today, I have with me Alex, and she is part of the immigration attorney, but I'm going to let her answer more of the stuff. So, Alex, welcome, Alex.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for joining. Before we move further, deep down into the immigration stuff, I would like to see if there is something. I want to start off by saying that just introduce yourself, what you do, why you do, and how you got into this one. It's kind of getting on to the point where we need to understand your story. You know what I mean?
My name is Alexandra Kontiuk. I'm an immigration attorney. I have been practicing immigration for a very long time. We're actually a decade on our own firm this year. So very excited about that milestone.
Congratulations, yeah.
Thank you, thank you. Why do I do what I do? Well, I'm an immigrant myself. I came as a refugee in the 90s with my family. And it's not that I always knew I wanted to be an attorney, but I always knew I was in a unique position because of seeing the way my family had to adjust and adapt being immigrants, right? None of us spoke English. None of us knew the commonalities of this country. You have to deal with so many things being immigrant in this country. Okay. And I grew up through that, right? Seeing my family try their best to learn the environment, learn the language, work to support our family, everything. Work through the immigration process. There's just a lot of things involved. And I always loved that aspect of being able to learn new cultures and new languages. I speak four languages myself, Ukrainian, Russian, Spanish, and English, and would like to learn more, of course. There's a never-ending bucket list of languages that I have.
That's impressive.
Yeah, thank you. So when I finally got out of law school and it was time to kind of, you know, pick the career and things like that, I had tried all different types of law. And finally, I was like, I really want to marry those two things. Mm. My experience as an immigrant, my family's experience as an immigrant, and being able to learn about different types of cultures and people and languages and things like that and be able to help them. So that's when I found immigration law and I was like, this is it. This is really a beautiful marriage of all the things that I am passionate about and want to help people through.
That's incredible. It's just knowing that why you are in the field and you being immigrant yourself. It's incredible. Being an immigrant, I know that when we come, like a long time back, there was nobody to help. There was nothing there. I don't even know where to go, who to talk to.
Absolutely.
Can I talk to somebody? And there were so many challenges we faced and there's no place to go. So let me take a step back and say, what are the common challenges when somebody approaches you? What are the common challenges you see people encounter?
I mean, there's so many, when you're an immigrant, you have to deal with not just one adaptation, but several adaptations all at once. And I think there's a feeling of anxiety and overwhelm that you're sitting there and you're trying to, okay, well, let me figure out how to support my family. Let me figure out how I can better learn the language so I can assimilate. Let me figure out how I can, you know, for those with families, help my kids persevere in this new environment that I know nothing about and I know they know nothing about. Let me figure out how we can work through the immigration laws and the immigration paperwork that we have and who do I go to seek advice. I mean, that's an overwhelming amount of things that you have to go through. And I think those are really the common challenges, is that everybody's not just looking at, okay, I got to get through these immigration paperwork and that's it. And everything was comfy cozy. Everything else is okay. No, you're dealing with your everyday life on top of adaptation in so many different areas, because it's not an environment that you're accustomed to. And so I think that's one of the most common challenges that I see with my clients, is that they're trying to have everything together and it's just so difficult, which is why we really try to kind of take a holistic approach in our practice, at least. And we try to be able to refer them to people that aren't even just for immigration services, right? Like you said, like when you were coming, you didn't know who to go to for advice, for immigration advice, right? But now think about it, you have to pay your taxes, so you don't know where to go to for accounting advice. Now you have to maybe make a repair in your apartment or your home, and you don't know where to go to, right, for those repairs. Like there's an unlimited amount of things that, if you think about in everyday life, that even people that have been living here for decades don't necessarily know. And so in our practice, we try to have that holistic kind of overall advice too, and have a referral network of trusted people that we can send them to and say, hey, don't worry, you need your taxes, you have a tax question, obviously we can't answer that, but we know somebody who can. And here's a name of a person, or here are names of several people that may be able to help you. And at least that way, it gives them the pathway to kind of be less overwhelmed in life. Because we're all dealing with so much overwhelm. I think everybody deals with it. And just to have something that eases that even a little bit, I know it's definitely a great comfort to people.
Well, I agree with you. See, the thing you give an example of, all of these, the plumbing issues or tax. See, if something breaks, I know that I need to get help, somebody who can fix it. Now, I've seen, and myself experienced too in the past, and I see a couple of folks, they don't even know that I should seek for a legal assistance here. They just don't know. So ideally, what I would like to take a step back and say, what should I look for? As if somebody is listening to this one and they are an immigrant, saying that, hey, if you're going through this, you should look for a legal assistance. You should not try to break your head and try to figure it out that what I'm going to do. Take advice, go for a legal assistance, because plumbing work, water breaks, water's coming up, I need help to fix it. But legal, you don't know. Oh, somebody can help me on the legal on this one? That is a question I had in the past. I don't even know that I should seek an assistance. So any thoughts on that?
Absolutely. So I think a lot of people look at the forms and they say, oh, this looks simple enough. My friend, neighbor, cousin, what have you, can translate this for me and help me out with this, and we can fill in all the boxes, right? I see a lot of this also from clients that come in that are like, oh, well, we did it ourselves, or my cousin helped me, and now I have this other paperwork that we got from the government and I have no idea what to do with it, right? Absolutely. And so I think the first piece of advice is, you know, it may look simple, but really immigration law is one of the most complex areas of law in the country. So things aren't as simple as they seem. And I'm going to give you like a little anecdote. One day I was in Newark waiting for an immigration interview with a client. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting next to an attorney who's probably in his 70s or so. Mm-hmm. And we're just chit-chatting because you have a lot of wait time. A lot of the time when you're waiting for these interviews, you just sit there and you're waiting. You're talking to your clients. You're talking to whoever else is waiting there with you in the waiting room. Mm-hmm. And so I'm talking to him and he's like, look, I've been in this practice for over 50 years, right? Mm-hmm. And he goes to me, back in the 70s, 80s, even 90s, you would have a packet and it would be like three pieces of paper and you'd fill it out. It was fairly straightforward, fairly simple. And that's it. That was it. And now you're looking at it and it's like, you have a packet of like 200 pages that you're looking at. And it's not only this application, but you need to do this application and know that this application has to go with these other five applications, right? That,
wow,
that aren't mentioned anywhere. And then with each of those applications, there are document requirements. So just a lot more goes into it these days than it used to. And I think that's kind of the effect of like globalization that we're seeing more and more happen, the ease of travel, right? Mm-hmm. And people moving around more in the world, right? And so when you see that, you know, they have to adapt the systems and they try to adapt the systems. And by doing that, they make it more complex. And so even though sometimes it may seem like, okay, I'm just looking at a few boxes that are asking my name and my address and fairly simple looking things, it's not as easy as you think. And that's where a lot of clients like get into trouble, because then you get to a point where you do need legal counsel. And then when you go to the legal counsel, you end up spending more time and more money, frankly, to try to fix some of the things as opposed to just going to legal counsel in the first place. Mm-hmm. I would say the majority of clients should obviously not just go to legal counsel or go to somebody accredited, because there are a lot of people in the community that are like, I can do your paperwork, no problem. But the issue is, if you don't go to somebody accredited, usually an accredited nonprofit organization that can work on these immigration type applications and are sanctioned to do so, right? They have accredited representatives that are sanctioned to do so by the Department of Homeland Security, or an attorney that is capable and does immigration. I think it's very pertinent to say, hey, I'm going to go to somebody like that versus a friend, or even there are some storefronts that have like immigration help, but really they're not accredited or they're not licensed. The difference between going to a legal accredited attorney or accredited legal representative is, if you do something wrong as an attorney, there's usually recourse for the client, right?
Yeah.
If you do something wrong as an accredited representative, there's usually recourse for the client. Mm-hmm. If you do something wrong as just a quote-unquote immigration service that's just a storefront, that's not licensed, that's not accredited, then it's on the client. So, and there's actually court cases about this that have come out because it's been such a prevalent problem throughout the whole country, where people are just going to a storefront that says tax preparation and an immigration form,
wow,
or things like that. And so there's actually been court cases where the court cases say that if you go to one of those places and they're not licensed and they're not accredited and they make a mistake, then you're at fault. And so it might be really difficult to walk that back, if at all, sometimes not even possible, right, to walk that back. And so I would say, make sure that person is licensed. There are Google searches you can even do, like for an attorney, because sometimes these people say they're attorneys and they're not.
Oh, wow. Is that a real thing? People say they're not? Oh, wow.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So a quick Google search, and you can just say New Jersey bar search attorney, and you can find anybody's name, and you can see if the person is actually an attorney or not an attorney. And so there's ways to be able to check like who you're going to. But I think it's so crucial that people know the difference between going to somebody that's accredited or a licensed attorney, as opposed to just going to a service that purports to be able to help you with these immigration forms, is that really the liability, right? The liability of it. Mm-hmm. I studied for years and I have obviously a long experience background, and I have a license to protect, right? So I'm going to do everything possible. Forget the fact that I like helping people, and that's really part of the passion of the job. If I screw something up, then my license is on the line.
Yeah.
So really, you hiring an attorney are getting that protection, right? Because you have somebody who's doing work where their license is on the line.
I agree. And you know what, that thing which you said, that you meant that the experienced attorney at one of the offices, and I was just, that taught me thinking also, saying that yes, there were very less papers earlier, but now that after so many events happened, that immigration laws have been going through a ton of changes, and keeping up with them is one of the things. But like the one you just mentioned, that there are a lot of fake attorneys sitting around, the services sitting around, and by the way, you as the immigrant are liable for a lot of things. So give me some more examples for these changes in the immigration law, something simpler, something people can understand and kind of align with whatever they do when they're kind of looking at filing applications, stuff like that. Give me some examples for that so that I can connect well with all of those issues.
Sure. I mean, well, there was just a change on April 1st. They changed all the pricing.
Wow.
So that's the simplest example I can give you. But they changed all of the pricing on April 1st. So now the filing fees are different. Mm-hmm. They're not what everybody has been used to. They have this fee calculator online for USCIS, and it's become super convoluted to use. So before, where people can just go to this fee calculator, if they knew about the fee calculator, of course, but they would go to this fee calculator and say, okay, how much do I have to pay on filing X, Y, and Z form? Now it's even more complicated to be able to use that fee calculator and even know how much you have to pay for these forms that you're filing. And if you have the wrong filing fee, then you send in the packet, and you say, okay, I'm going to send them this packet. It takes them about 30 days to process the packet, sometimes more time, depending on the type of application you're making. And then if they reject it, then it'll take about another 30 days to get it back to you. You've just lost 2 months in just a fee change, right? Which is something seemingly super simple.
Yes.
So those kinds of things happen. There are more complicated, obviously, changes in the last administration. I don't know what the statistics are in this one, but the last one, because it was so impactful, I do know the statistics, but it was something like one change in immigration law per day of the administration. So imagine there's 4 years of an administration and you literally have one change every single day in immigration law.
Wow, are you serious? That's like a lot of changes, my God.
Absolutely.
It's like how you guys keep up to that. That's one part. But then other one would be like the immigrants coming in will have no idea, no clue that these are like,
exactly.
Oh my God.
So what tends to happen is any administration that comes in obviously wants to make their own marks and their own changes within immigration. Obviously, some of those changes come from Congress. Some of those changes come from the executive branch. So the different changes can come from different places. And what happens a lot of the time is that there's always somebody unhappy with the change. And so there's always some sort of lawsuit that goes on. So once the change is made, I think the most popular one we can talk about is probably the Dreamers, the DACA legislation, right? That was installed by President Obama back in the day. Mm-hmm. And that's been through litigation through several presidencies and still is in litigation. And so what you see in the courts is something like, well, now we can't file DACA. Okay, now we can file DACA, right? Each court has a different type of decision. And so you have all these changes. Okay, now we can file DACA, but only renewals and no new DACA applications and this or that and the other thing. And so you see not just a change within the administration, right, that's created from the administration or from Congress, but then you see organizations that may not be exactly happy with the change, or they say the change is unconstitutional or what have you. And so they have these legal challenges to those changes. And so those have to work their way through the courts because we have judicial processes. And so in these judicial processes, each court can say, well, we're going to stop this part while we decide, right? Mm-hmm. Or we're going to let this part go while we decide. Or we're going to say, you can do this while we're making a decision, but not this other thing, right? And so you have these
interesting It is getting more, the laws are anyway more complex, and then
exactly
DC just add on to that.
Awesome. Exactly. So you have complexities within complexities. So you have the range of like the simple changes, which are the fees, things like that. And then you have the more complex changes, which have changes within the changes that happen through time.
So just to add to this one, Alex, and thank you for letting me interrupt you for a second.
No, no.
Just to add on to this one is like, how has technology impacted all these changes? Is that changing a lot? Like last 4 or 5 years, things have changed. Like we had a pandemic, and then people went like online Zoom stuff, and now we're trying to come out and kind of get into a hybrid model. If the laws are complex, you add more laws to it, and then and what we just talked about, it makes it complexity within complexities. Then I'm going to throw a technology on top of it. How is that working?
That's a great question. That's a great question. So yeah, absolutely. So one, with the pandemic, we saw a huge amount of changes because now there's just backlog everywhere. And I think you see it in the court systems. I think you see it throughout like immigration and things like that. So obviously less employees at the time. Mm. So less people to process all these applications and things like that. And so just backlog builds. And we know that immigration is already backlogged. So we're looking at even more backlog. So what do they do to try to help the backlog is they're like online filing. So we'll do on. So we've seen a lot of online filing pop up post pandemic, more so than during pandemic. It's kind of like on the line towards the end of pandemic and post pandemic. We have courts, immigration courts, that are doing more remote appearances. We have more online filing capabilities. But with that, you have more glitches in the system as well. So as anybody knows, if you've used a computer, sometimes you get the blue screen of death. And then you're like, what's going on with my application? Sometimes you log in and people don't know that, for example, in the USCIS accounts, if you're not active for 30 days, they'll just delete your application. So if you haven't submitted it and you say like, I want to get started early, right? I'm a planner and I want to put some of this information. And then you get to a part where you're like, oh, I really need to get some additional information for that. So I'll get back to it. Well, if you don't get back to it within 30 days, you're going to have to start over. So that's a fun part of it.
Fun part of it.
Obviously, I say that in jest, but there's complications there that if you're not using the system on a regular basis, obviously you don't know. And it's not intuitive where they're like, we will erase your application because you've been inactive for X amount of time. You know, it's just kind of like one day it's gone and you're like, where'd it go? And so there's all kinds of new
unstuffish
issues. Yes, yeah, that you have with the new tech that they're using. And
Interesting. So anybody, any immigrant coming to your offices and trying to talk to you about that, what is the first piece of advice or how do you start your process saying that, hey, this is how we start? I'm trying to see that there are two kinds of people. One, they are coming by themselves, like, hey, I want to work by myself. And then another one is the family immigrations a lot. And I'm not even touching the visa part of it. There's a lot of visa thingies which might jump up. But in general, when a new immigrant comes in, whether it's coming from themselves or for the family, what kind of advice or what kind of process you follow there?
So that's a good question. There's a global process for everybody that comes in. And then obviously we kind of hone in on an individualized strategy depending on what the person wants and what they need and what their options are. So it changes over time. But generally, what we like to do is get a background. Okay, what is your immigration history, right? When did you come? Who did you come with? How did you come? What are you interested in doing? And then really want to try to see what their needs and wants are, right? Because everybody's needs and wants are different. It's not something where, okay, I say, I want it this way, and maybe Sanjay wants it a different way, and maybe a third person wants it a different way, because different things are important to different people.
Correct.
And so we really try to figure out what's important to you as a client. What matters the most and what will make the most difference for you? We've had various clients, hey, my family member's ill. We had a client maybe a few months ago come in and was like, my family member's ill. They came to visit me and they fell ill and they have nobody in their home country. And now, you know, I want to see what to do to help them. I don't care about price. I don't care about time. I just want to be able to care for my family member. That's the biggest thing that's important to me right now. And so they didn't really want to worry about what the process entails or anything like that. They just wanted assurance to say, yes, we can do something. What can we do? And then do it. And that's it. So then they can have a peace of mind and be able to just care for their family member, right?
Yeah.
Because I think that was the most important thing to them. We have other people that want things the fastest way possible, right? Speed is really important to them.
Always everywhere people want things to be done like yesterday.
Sure. I mean, within certain parameters, right, there are certain things that we can do to make things faster for these processes. But again, within certain parameters, because USCIS and all these immigration departments have their own processing time for things. And sometimes there's no way to speed it up as well. So it's important to kind of clarify that for potential clients and people coming in and say, hey, well, here is the processing time that we're given. Depending on your situation, maybe we can apply to expedite, right, this processing time. We had a person years back that had a process with us already pending, and we were working on the process, and then they fell ill and they really needed the process, and it was a very, very urgent medical need, and so they needed the process really like expedited to the nth degree. And so we worked really hard and we were able to do that for them. And so that's exactly what we did. We were able to get it expedited, and that was that, which they were really grateful for. We had, when the Ukrainian war broke out, we had some people that wanted their family members' petition to go through as quickly as possible. And luckily there were options to expedite those kind of applications. So we would work with embassies and with CIS and these various agencies to try to expedite this as quickly as possible, because there are options for that. Now, on the other hand, sometimes there are no options for that. And we try to, as much as possible, be as blunt as possible about what is really realistic with an immigration and what is not, because I think that's important. I think it's important that the potential client understands, okay, this is what the parameters we are working within. And sometimes the things that they want are not possible. And instead of being like, okay, we'll just take your money and, you know, that being that, we let them know, like, what you're looking for is not a possibility, whether it's with us or anybody else. And so you should know that, because other people may try to take advantage of you, right? And say, sure, I'll do whatever you want, when it's not even a thing. Right. And so we want to be as straightforward as possible, explain the process, be able to kind of really hone it in to what their needs and wants are, again, within the parameters. And that's much how we do it.
Great. That's great. So a couple of more things. One main question, since I'm from the marketing side, I just wanted to get one marketing question, also push it in, that how is marketing or digital marketing is kind of helping you to help these immigrants or anybody who's coming to seek for legal assistance? Does it help? And if it does help, how does it help?
Absolutely. So I think it's a great boon to have more and more digital marketing avenues available to us. I think back in the day, like you said, like your family maybe not even know where to go to for advice. I think marketing has changed so much that now we can put out so much more information out into the world, so it reaches more people. For example, in the simplest example, we create pamphlets, right? There are common questions that everybody has. Okay, I have a process pending. Can I travel, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, okay, I just got my green card. What are the things that I have to look out for? And so these common questions that people normally have, we like to address them in various avenues so it reaches as many people as possible. So we do videos, short form, long form. We do posts in social media. We do blog posts to try to kind of reach the largest audience possible to be able to help more people. And it really does. It's really, really impactful and really amazing to see how many people are able to say, hey, thanks. Because of you, I know that there's an application out there for me. Or because of you, like, I know I can't travel more than 6 months out of the country with my green card.
Yeah.
Without a special permit. Right. And that is really, really nice. That's a really nice feeling to be able to put all of this information out there and say, hey, you're not alone. You have somebody to turn to for advice if you want. You have this information at your fingertips if you want. And my hope is that it only keeps getting better so we can reach more people.
So you know what? You're right. And you know what? There was a time in green card processing, there's a last stage is at 485 and you filed for it. So and I was like, hey, I need to travel. Can I travel outside the country? Oh, I came to know from somebody, but this information was not readily available. You need to seek out to the company you work for, then seek out to their and they're like assigned attorneys, and they say, oh, you need to get a documentation,
permit
or something, or travel documentation. And I was like, okay, so who's going to give me the travel documentation? It took such a long process to get something in place that I dropped the idea. Like, my God, I don't know.
I don't want to travel anymore.
There's a time to travel, like in July, August, and that time of like break time, and everybody's taking vacation. They're like, forget it now. I'm not going to travel. And then I waited till I get my green card and then I traveled. So I'm so happy to hear that you are doing a lot of these things, like in kind of videos or reels or something, which can help those immigrants and say that, yes, you can. Like simple question, like FAQs, if there are somebody sitting around, one small question and I need to wait for 3 years to get an answer for that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely.
I'm so glad that you guys are doing it. This is really going to be helpful. So Alex, this is great. Thank you so much for your time. But before we leave, I wanted you to get some details from me in terms of what are your areas of practice. If somebody wants to reach out to you, how can they reach out to you by email, phone? What is your email? What is your phone? I just want you to just talk to me about that and so that we can get it out to the people, also people who are having questions or need help.
Sure, absolutely. So we're looking in New Brunswick, but we use a lot of tech so we can really meet people anywhere in the country, in the world, even. And it's a beautiful thing. Talk about how technology changes. We really have the ability to reach so many more people. We have clients in Tennessee. We have clients in all these different areas, which is wonderful. So we offer virtual consults. We offer in-person consults. You can call us and we have answering service outside of the regular business hours, which are 8:30 to 5. So you could really be scheduled at any time you'd like, because we know that sometimes work gets in the way and you can only make that call at 6 p.m., which is absolutely fine. Our phone number is 908-336-7550. So you can call. We have a website, www.aglawnj.com. That's A as in Apple, G as in George, L as in Larry, A as in Apple, W as in Watermelon, N as in Nancy, J as in Jersey.com. And there's also a really nice, neat little scheduler there where you can always schedule an appointment with us through that and pick the way that's most comfortable for you. Or you can email us at info@aglawnj.com and we'll be happy to get back to you.
Great, great. Thank you. Thank you so much, Alex. This was very helpful. I hope somebody will find a lot of information from this thing to kind of answer a few questions, which they have.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for your time and enjoy your weekend.
Thank you too.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode of Pioneers and Pixels. We hope the discussion was enlightening and informative. giving you a clearer insight into the complexities. Remember to subscribe to our podcast on your favorite platform and never miss an episode. Join host Sanjay K. Katarpal next time for more insights and interviews with leading legal experts. Until then, stay informed and empowered. This has been Pioneers in Pixels. Thank you for listening and have a great day.